Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is actor Craig Bierko. Now, we may touch on some politics, but today's show is just going to be fun. We're going to chat about Craig, his life, whatever comes up. I'm looking forward to it. But before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Craig Bierko. Welcome back to the show, Craig.
It's been a while. I've just been in a kind of floating in a dark space since last we spoke.
just waiting for my call. And like,
I guess that's what it was. I didn't know whether it was, was this a pre-death experience? And I thought, no, that was the actual interview. This has to be, no, I'm joking, of course. No, not of course. How would anybody know that I'm joking and not just somebody?
Because you're you.
Yeah, I'm you. I'm indescribably me.
Well, and part of the reason I said this in the intro, but part of the reason I wanted you to be on the show is because I didn't really want to focus on politics today. There's a lot of people out there who are focusing on politics, and I just want to laugh and have fun, and maybe we'll touch on a few things.
So let's call the simpleton.
Yes, exactly.
Kick the bar darn twice, wake him up, give him a minute, throw some oats in, and call the simpleton.
See, this is why I wanted... This is why... Oh, and also I wanted you to know that Seska has told you hello.
Yeah.
And he made
us
sound...
Just love him. Yeah.
He made us sound...
Tried to, actually tried to... This is the ultimate compliment for me, but I tried to... I want to say Filch, and I don't want to mispronounce that, but Filch, I believe, is a cinnamon for stealing. He put a Larry Sanders video. This is deep diving stuff, but he put a Larry Sanders video up in response to one that I put, because I've been going on a Jeffrey Tambor on Larry Sanders tear. Mm-hmm. I had a cough last week and I lay on the couch and sat there appreciating Jeffrey Tambor. And I know he's canceled. I'm not allowed to do that. But I think if we're sick and we're in the midst of canceling ourselves physically, can we say that's what the body's doing?
Perhaps,
so
yes.
I neutralized the sickness by harnessing the cancellation. I've lost interest in my own thoughts. But anyway, I was watching a video he put up, and I thought, that's the one that I've been looking for.
Oh,
I've been
man.
Looking for that video. It was very specific. Not only that, when I found any take of the scene that he put up there, and if you're familiar with Larry Sanders, very quickly, Jeffrey Tambor plays like the Ed McMahon kind of idiot character. And it was an exchange between him and Larry. And it was an age old, like an argument that keeps coming up where that you never actually see this happen. Isn't it amazing we're 14 minutes into the show? I haven't let you ask a question, and yet I'm talking, and I'm leaving you no opening, and I'm not talking about anything. Well, but I digress. Or I would have had I been referencing anything. But anyway, the thing is, Jeffrey Tambor, apparently, and you never actually see him do this on the show, they only reference it, but one of the, before the untimely passing of the mother, Judd, she was sick. And so the daughter came out to perform, and Jeffrey Tambor's character, Hank Kingsley, introduces the Judd. And that has been a backstage laugh and an ongoing joke. And so there's a moment where he, out of nowhere, out of frustration, Hank Kingsley just goes, "She was a Judd! There was one Judd of two Judds. It makes perfect sense." And it goes, "And you guys are always making fun of me. Like when I fell down and I chipped my tooth on the urinal. What's so funny about that?" And the thing that I can't find ever in the clip that Seska found was Chandling, who was, I can't appreciate him more.
Yeah.
Just goes, "It was the back tooth, Hank." and he just keeps going. He goes, didn't know. And it was, and I just, praise be to Seska. apologies to anybody who's still hanging on with what I imagine are just white knuckles to this interview. And my inability to make a point.
But that's why I had you on.
Yeah, I know. But, so, and you know what's funny is I had such regard for you that... Oh. And it is hard to, well, don't laugh at that. With that or at that, are you laughing? I do. And I did, during that 50, I asked you to call for a little inside the Hollywood Beltway news. I asked you to call if I could have an extra 15 minutes before you called, because I wanted to eat my salad. So I was eating my salad and thumbing through the New York Times thinking, hey, bone up on today's, news.
News, right.
Take a look at the periodicals. And also, I don't need to do that because everything's infuriating, and I agree. Let's stay as far away from it as possible.
Well, I may ask a question or two about certain things that you're, concerned about right now, but we're not going to talk about that this second. But I do want to tell you that the last time you were on the show, you had said Seska, and Bob grabbed it, and now he uses it on his show. So
does he refer to himself in the first Seska?
No, he doesn't. But he'll if we're talking about you, because I'm on the Friday show, which is the after party, and it's for patrons only. So oftentimes, if we talk about you and you come up, then he'll play that little soundbite. So
is that right?
And yes.
So there's a little Seska.
Yeah.
It's like a little hey now.
Yeah. And it's all you. It's all about you. It's all about you. And you know,
well,
we almost.
Let me get just so he has some. I want to get some good ones. Seska. You're listening to Seska. Hey, that's kind of Seska.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a tad Seska. 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 Oh, says you. Seska. I don't know.
Stop laughing.
So you say. Seska. I know that's not good. We'll come up with some. I'll send him a half an hour's worth of
I'm sure he would love it. Oh my God. He's so into the sound bites. Okay, so let's see. Now, you have to know that I have prepared certain questions for you, but they're not related and they're all random. So I'm going to ask you one thing, and then I might ask you another question that has nothing to do with it. But then,
like
you know,
podcast.
Yeah, and we're just going to see where it goes. So the first thing I'm going to ask is not that. Well, it might be fun for you, but it's just a regular old question that I might ask any kind of actor guest, which is, are you working any projects right now?
I said it is the worst question asked, and it's, I'm always amazed that when actors ask each other when they're doing something, so what's next?
Yeah,
because that's literally like being on death row going, is it rope or an injection? That's literally what it's like. Are you scared? Do you think there's a God? What do you think happens to us? I know it's gonna hurt for a long time, and they don't, when they electrocute you, it's like it takes like an hour and a half and then you burst into flame from the inside. But anything that's so actors. So I just finished a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay.
And whatever's coming up, I'm not sure, but I just did this great movie called Bed, which is actually, it gets funnier than the title, but it was just, I don't want to talk too much about it and give too much away, but it's a really funny, very heartwarming movie. And the dead, the title is spelled D, and then there's parentheses for the, you know, for the E, and then AD. So it's it's sort of dead dad.
Right.
So I play a recently deceased dad and working out some father-daughter issues in the afterlife. And
that sounds good.
It's was just a lovely, lovely, lovely movie. And
when is it going to be out?
Well, I'm lying. So, it's not really going to come out. I also am the new She-Hulk. No, it's I can't imagine why you wouldn't want to talk politics. We made it, and this is one of those films that it will probably hit the festival circuit. It could also be streaming by tomorrow. That's how
right.
Move. I mean, it was directed and co-written by Claudia Lanau. Do you know Claudia?
I do not.
Very, very funny person. And she and her brother, or half brother, I think, is Mark Rappaport, who is yelling on a podcast or TikTok, something. He's very, really wonderful, familiar character actor. You definitely know who he is if you saw him. But he's not in it, so I don't know why I'm selling his career. But what I'm saying is she comes from this really amazingly funny family. She has this daughter that I had never met. Her name is Izzy. And I'm blanking on her last name, which is horrible. But Izzy actually wrote the movie. And she's also on a television show. And I don't remember the name of the show. I would make a great publicist.
You would.
And anyway, she wrote this terrific script. And Claudia sent it to me and said, would you want to do this? And I thought, oh, well, you know. I thought, oh, student film. Mm-hmm. Let's stay busy, you know. I'll do one for take one for the team. I'll go and do yours. And I read this thing, and it was the best script I had read all year. It really, really was. And I was so moved. And I went and I was very, and that just fell into my lap. And I had a great time. And I'd love to talk about it, but I really can't because I don't want to give anything away. So whenever that comes out, you'll be the first to know.
All right. Well, I will hold you to that. If you tell other people first, I'm never speaking to you again.
Okay. I got to go back to the void. That'll be all right. I'll call Seska. And then the other thing that I did that. That was out in Los Angeles. And then I caught the Airstream back, when you fly back, they used to say a thing. Whatever. I flew back on an airplane, I landed, got off the plane, and then I did this play called Windows, written by Tawny O'Dell, which is a name I can remember. a wonderful playwright. And it was a series of monologues and scenes about people in the pandemic. And I remember during the pandemic, you know, we all had our friends that we spoke to every night, real or imagined. This one happened to be real. And I said, you know, someone is going to write a goddamn play about all this. And you know what? We're all going to have to see it because we're going to have a pandemic. And turns out I was that guy.
That's so funny.
I did a workshop of it a few months ago. And it was, I thought, oh, this is, it's actually pretty, it's pretty good. I think in falsetto. And then they turned around and said, we're going to do a 5-night, I thought it was another workshop, but it ended up being, a 5-night, sort of trial run at Town Hall here in New York City, which is, for any of your, out of towners, it's a big house, about 1,500 seats. We filled it up. I don't know how they did it, but they advertised it really well. We had some good, there were great people on it. And I ended up doing a scene with an actress named Tanya Pinkins, Tony Award-winning actress, who is just incredible on stage. But Mr. Tony Danza was in it, and he did this monologue. That was just heartbreaking, and it was Danza like you'd never seen Danza.
Really?
You know, well, I say that half jokingly because he's been, you know, the guy's a perennial. He's a survivor. He's 75 years old. He looks great. Looks like he weighs about as much as your average pocket comb. He's very thin and lithe. And he's, you know, I don't know if you know, but he's a boxer. He started out as a boxer.
Right.
And I'm, you know, I'm getting up in years. I'm going to be 38 soon. And I said, how do you do that? And please don't say Ozempic. And he goes, no. Consistency, Jericho, consistency. And he's right. He goes to the gym every day, and it was great. And God bless Tony Danza. I've been to the gym every day since he said
really?
It.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I say every day. I went yesterday, and I plan on going today again. Consistency. and because I did notice, like I did an event a couple of nights ago. The wonderful one of my favorite artists, Drew Friedman. He's a cartoon artist. People might his iconic work you would recognize if you saw. He did a lot. He worked a lot with like pixelating dots, you know, and he did a lot of work for National Lampoon. There's a famous portrait of Shemp that he drew for Screw, the first issue of Screw magazine, which is people would recognize certainly your audience. There's a film called Drew Friedman, The Vermeer of the Borscht Belt, because he draws almost exclusively old Jews. That's what he loves. That's his area of expertise. And I was there. This is a long way of saying I saw some pictures of myself because I did a panel afterwards, and Jesus Christ, I look like seven Tyndaleys roped together. I was like, when did that happen, Bierko? I mean, you made it through the pandemic and you didn't eat anything with the word loaf in it. And plus, I get out, I walk around, but you know, you get older and the system starts to slow down. And I just thought, we can't be our own parade float. You know, I'm going to have to hire midgets to pull me down the street to the store. This is ridiculous. Can I say street? I'm not losing the word midget, and there it is. I'm putting that out there. Please cancel me. It's only a matter of time anyway. I'm sticking with midget.
My
favorite
I'm
Willie
just
Nelson
laughing.
Song. What's yours?
Wait, say that again.
Sticking with midget.
I know, but you asked me what my favorite one.
What's your? That's my favorite Willie Nelson song. Is sticking with midget. What's yours? I'm sticking with midget. We'll go and watch kids get into trouble on the beach. Everything's out of reach for my little midget.
OMG. Okay. What was I just going to ask you? Because it wasn't what I... Oh, did you... Okay, you talked about the pandemic, which... Is that play finished? Or are you still doing it?
Oh, it was only 5 nights.
Oh, okay.
And it was... We sold out. Well, I sold out a long time ago. but we sold out run. I think what they did is by doing it for 5 nights, they were able to quote unquote workshop it, see what needed pruning, get a big audience reaction, not just 15 people in a room. And then word is, and I don't want to curse anything, but the general word is that this will be something that will be coming back some form fairly soon, which is nice. I love that there are shows because it really is a series of monologues. Mm-hmm. So Tony was in it, and again, he did this. He was terrific. He did a monologue. I don't want to give too much away, but it was basically a guy who in denial about his drinking, the day drinking, and the cost of it. Mm-hmm. Tova Feldshuh is in it, other than Mr. Mick Jagger, I've never seen anybody so tiny become so gigantic and fill a space.
Wow.
Right before my eyes. Tova Feldshuh is an amazing actress. She's in it. There were a lot of really great, great people, which I guess was argument enough for having me there as a counterbalance and a reminder.
No, because everybody loves you, Craig. did you ever get COVID?
If I did get it, I got it right at the beginning. Do you remember when there was just that boat that was right off the coast, some coast, and they were like,
"Oh yes,
a lot of sick people on this boat."
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I was doing a play, a two-hander with Len Cariou, wonderful actor. People might know from Sweeney Todd, and many other things. A terrific, terrific actor who an 80-year-old guy, and it was a father and son play. And I don't want to leave the wrong impression, but within the first 5 minutes, he touches my face a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a father and son thing, and he's annoying me touching my face. Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit to set things up at the beginning, but he's touching my face, which once this thing started was the first thing they told: don't touch your face.
Right.
Don't touch your own face, let alone just don't be touching other people's faces on it, you know. But he was touching my face, and he's 80, and nobody knew what was going on. I think they'd started putting hand sanitizer backstage, and I noticed I'm having trouble getting through the show without coughing. I seem to have a little cough, so I put little glasses of water and tissue around the set because it was, you know, it was just, you know, this one big sort of kitchen living room set. And I did note for about a week, I had to turn up stage and find ways to, you know, excuse a cough.
Right.
Or, you know, but, and it was a deep chest cough, and I, knock on wood, I rarely get sick. So that something might have passed through me. Nothing stops Len, who's just a bull. You know, he just, nothing, he wasn't sick. And that was my first concern. After, you know, then when everything got locked down, I kept calling just going, just to make sure that nothing I had or didn't have got over to him. So I don't think I had, I think I just had some kind of cough or maybe in, you know, because it was also, I think it was in March. When was that initial?
Yes, it was March. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was cold and flu season. Something might have been. I never, ever got the flu shot. I never do that. So it's possible that I got a little something, a little tickle. And it came and went fairly quickly. And I'm just so glad that Len is okay. I don't, to my knowledge, he hasn't had it either. So that's a very long, I could have just said no, right?
But you're not sure.
I can't. I'm not that guy.
I haven't had it, and neither has Bob, neither has my mom. But
that's
then,
interesting. Yeah. I haven't met too many people. What can I ask, what's your blood type?
I don't know. I think my mother knows it, but I don't know.
Oh, that's all you need to tell the doctor if you're bleeding out.
I don't know. But I you know what, the reason why I didn't get it is because Bob and I never leave the house. That's kind of, I mean, we do actually. Oh, we have seen, but his father.
So Bob doesn't know either?
Say that again?
Bob doesn't know his own blood type either?
I don't know if he knows it. He might know it.
He's just solid Seska.
He's just solid Seska.
Yeah.
But his father had a stroke a couple, like, God, I think it was like 2022. And so we've, you know, and then for a long time, his father lived very close to us. So we were trying not to get it because, you know, he'd have to go see his dad for one reason or another. And it was pretty often. And then my mother just had knee surgery and I had to take care of her for 6 weeks and I didn't want to get it. So, you know, I mean, we've been trying. So this is the first time since the pandemic that I have not been wearing masks when I go anywhere. I will wear masks. Yeah, I will wear masks during the cold and flu season because why the hell not? I mean, who wants, whether it's COVID or the flu or anything.
There's some other thing going around now. There's some cough, at least in New York. Everybody is coughing in New York.
Interesting. I hate those coughing. I fucking hate those coughing things. Those are the worst.
Well, I think this was, I mean, I remember reading about it, that there was, here's another, the next one's like locked and loaded and it's about to hit. And I thought, I wonder if this is that thing. So I may have had some variation of it.
Right.
You know, the last play I did before this play, Windows, was The Girl from the North Country, Connor McPherson's Bob Dylan musical, which sounds crazy, but it was really beautiful. But that was I did that as everything began opening up again. So all of the audience, everyone in the audience was still masked. And as soon as we walked off stage, you know, we had to put a mask on. And I, of course, like everybody else in the cast, died the death of being in the middle of a scene and realizing, shit, I'm wearing the mask.
Yeah.
Because it takes place in, you know, rural 1930s. But I tore the mask right off like nothing happened. And the funniest thing about it was the audience didn't even respond. Everybody was on the same page.
Wow.
You know, it wasn't like some weird, I mean, any other time, people would have been like, why are you wearing a surgical mask? and also, what are you, an idiot? You're on stage. And, you know, everyone, I think, was so used to this and tired of this nonsense. It wasn't nonsense. It was necessary. I don't mean it in that way. I'm not making a statement. But, and yet, please cancel me. I'm begging you to cancel. Anyway. I don't think I have it. I know that my blood type is B negative, which is kind of appropriate, I suppose. But it's also like it's. I think there is a blood type,
right?
And I don't believe in any of this, but where they said, yeah, it's very rare. We're not getting a lot of people with that blood type.
Yeah.
And I think it might have been that Also, I just have this Eastern European constitution. I really have just, I tend not to get sick.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, same with Bob. And you know what? I used to get sick all the time. I used to be a smoker, and I stopped smoking in 2013. Thank God.
Oh,
but, I used to get like colds and sore throats all the time.
Yeah.
And really, since I quit smoking, I had one minor cold. And I mean, there was this one time Bob had a fever and he was so sick. I took care of him. I didn't get sick. I used to catch everything. And so I really think, you know, obviously quitting smoking was a big deal and I just don't get sick anymore. So I'm so
that
glad.
That was a hard one. I've smoked for, I was in it. When did you start? Had you been smoking?
Oh my God.
Since
it's so embarrassing. Yeah. Since I was a kid,
it's like
13. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so that's when most people pick up these. I started when I was 34.
Wow.
33 or 34. Yeah, like a moron. Who does that? Well, You do it if you have a girlfriend who smokes Marlboro Reds and makes them look like chocolate pettifogs. You know, they look so delicious that I couldn't not reach over and go, can I have a like it was a Milano.
Right.
I just like, can I have a bite? So, and I would take a drag, and of course it was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And they were Marlboro Reds, which is tantamount to smoke. It's like smoking a Mazda.
Yeah.
You know, and I would cough. And then I stopped coughing, and I just got this head rush. And I went, hey, I'm onto something. She goes, yeah,
that goes away.
Don't
yeah.
do this. And I said, I've just always been curious. Where do you want a cigarette? I never understood that. And she goes, I'll tell you, it's around here, pointing vaguely to her abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, that's where the craving is. I go, it doesn't make any sense. I like a space explorer. I'm like, I'm going in. I want to know where. And then I'll get right out.
Yeah.
And she said, don't do it.
Yeah.
And I kept doing it. And then I woke up one morning and I was like, where are those cigarettes? And I got one of her cigarettes and I was in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in with Marlboro Reds. I finally pulled back. And I think I was smoking like Merits or something like that. And I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And I was like, schmuck. And I was like, well, now we know it's where it is. You kind of want it here.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed vaguely to my own abdomen, which was what it was. I couldn't understand like inventing. How do you invent a hunger or a craving?
Right.
Like, how do you invent one? It was such a stupid, but that really was my unconscious desire, I believe.
That's fascinating.
What is wanting a cigarette? Why would you want to light something on fire and put it in your
Well, I remember in the 70s, you know, I mean, everybody was smoking. I have a picture of my dad. He got remarried. I think this was like in 1975 or 6. And somebody had posted, one of my family.
I'm gonna write 6. Hold on.
One of my family members had posted a picture of the wedding day, and we were all at my aunt's, or at my stepmother's Aunt Thelma's house, right? So everyone's sitting around Aunt Thelma's house with a cigarette in their hand. And it was like, oh my God, like everyone smoked. And so I do remember when I started, my mom was living with this, we had my mom had a roommate. When I was 8 years old, I would introduce this woman, Phyllis, as my roommate. I'd like, here, meet my roommate, Phyllis.
And how old were you?
8. But Phyllis and my mom would smoke. And I remember one time when I was 8, just like watching Phyllis smoke. And it just like you said, it was like, it just looked so cool and I wanted to do it. And then when I was about 13 years old, I started stealing cigarettes from my mother. And, you know, I didn't smoke regularly, but I would, you know, and some of my friends at school smoked. So but I always hid it. I was always ashamed of myself. I always knew that it was disgusting and ugly. And then I wanted to quit for so long. And I, you know, I would have periods where I would smoke less or not at all for a little while, but I smoked. And then the crazy thing was I decided, and I'm not recommending this for anybody, but I'm just saying this is what worked for me. I thought, all right, I don't want to do this anymore. So I went and I got the vape cigarettes, which is funny because I didn't want to use them. I did want to use it as a crutch, but I knew that it wouldn't be something I would replace. I knew that it was just going to, because I know what, like when you try to quit, you've got that little voice in your head, like just have one. So I thought, I'll get the lowest nicotine vape. And then when you have that voice in your head, if you don't give into it and you do take on another task, you kind of forget about it till it pops up again. So I thought, well, I'm just going to, and this is what I did. I got the lowest nicotine And then if I wanted a puff, I'd just say, well, I'm going to wait. I'll wait for an hour. And then an hour would pass and I'd think about it and I'm going to wait again. And so, but the thing is that the vape made me cough. Cigarettes didn't make me cough, but the vape did. So it was great because I knew I wasn't going to get stuck on it. And then it took 2 weeks and I was done. And not only, it was literally the easiest thing that I ever did. Trying to quit prior to that, it was impossible for me. I just couldn't do it. So
you,
I don't,
you couldn't. Oh,
I couldn't quit.
The vape was easy.
Yeah, and quitting the vape was easy, but then I never wanted a cigarette again. It's like
then you need it. Yeah,
it was great.
I don't know what it is, and if there is, I rarely see people smoking. But if anybody is stuck and wants to smoke, my heart goes out to you. My story was really weird. I had been smoking for about 7 years, and it's not my term. It's Janine Garofalo's term. I was doing watervention, which is, you know, you think you quit, but you're like, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, so you go across the street. At that point, it was $5 for a pack, but it's like 10 now, isn't it? But it was $5 a pack. So it's like, I'm going to have a $5 cigarette, and then I'm going to do a watervention, which is you take the rest of the pack and you put it under the faucet. Right?
I totally would do that, yes.
And then an hour later, you're like, you fucking idiot. Why didn't you, now I got to go. So I'd have a $300 worth of cigarettes because I keep going back and forth to the store. Why do you keep doing this? Why don't you just smoke the pack? You know, that guy at the store. So just smoke, you idiot boy. But it wasn't working, and it was weird because I happened not to drink, and that was a choice too. And I found that was to be just a decision. And I think it was because I got out early enough. Like I there was someone in my family I just watched destroy their life in real time.
Yeah.
Things were going well. And I thought, why don't we just drive past the casino? Let's not even spin the wheel, you know? And I didn't like it that much. In fact, I hated the taste of alcohol. It was purely for medicinal, you know, antidepressant effect. And I thought this doesn't ultimately go to a good place. So that seemed relatively easy.
Mm-hmm.
And but cigarettes, that was nuts. From a stupid curiosity of like, where do you want one? I hooked and I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And I did that watervention nonsense probably for about a year, tried the patch, and then I would wear the patch. And this is why my heart goes out to anybody who smokes. I wanted to want a cigarette enough that I took the patch off, which is like, I don't even understand that. Like there's such a lower dark level of addiction that is beyond comprehension that I remember I was doing an episode of a Law and Order, and I had to get up early because the van was going to come to take me to set. And I thought, fucking God, I don't want to smoke. But I think everybody there at some point, you know, was smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody was smoking. That was back in the day when people smoked. And I thought, you know what? And I got in the van. I went, forgot my patch. Goddamn. Well, if I want a cigarette, I'm gonna smoke. Now, the night before, I did actually lay in bed and say, God, it's me, Margaret. If you're up there, if you exist, can you do this for me? I can't do it. And I'm telling you, I forgot the patch, and I have not. I didn't want one.
Interesting.
I just thought, if I want a cigarette, I'll have one. And
yeah.
I had just since that day, I didn't want one. So if you are struggling, give it a shot. Ask for help.
Just
I'm telling you, I was not a religious person in the least. Been agnostic since day one, but I tend to believe there's got to be something, not because of that. There are other experiences, but I did ask for help, and how else could I chemically explain the fact that I couldn't outrun this craving that I stupidly wanted to create? And 7 years later, I was like, God damn it. I was such a when I say bad smoker, I never smoked more than like a pack a day. I was never really leaned into it like that. It was just, there were cues, the phone rings. Oh, good, I don't have to just talk on the phone. I can smoke. It was that kind of thing,
right.
You know? And then also, I did find it delightful that you could be at a restaurant and then there were certain people before dessert came, you get up and you stand in a circle and you talk for 5 minutes. And these, we understood, we're the cool people. We're lighting things on fire and sticking them into our heads. you know, where are these people? But I kind of like the social aspect of it. But what I wanted was to be Dean Martin, who looked like he was born smoking a cigarette, right, you know? Yeah. And I was doing a play that took place in the 40s. I was playing an ex-army guy, rolls into town. It was based on Thérèse Raquin, actually. It's basically The Postman Always Rings Twice with music. And I was like, don't you think the guy should smoke? And the director goes, smoke, if you want to smoke, smoke. And I was like, yeah. So I smoke. And after the rehearsal goes, I don't think the guy should smoke. And I said, based on what? He did just come home because you look like an idiot when you smoke. You don't look like you smoke. And I said, but I actually smoke. Yeah, but you don't look like you look like someone on stage who doesn't smoke. And I never got that cool sort of matter of fact, you know.
Right.
I just happen to be smoking. Oh, am I on television? Well, whatever. And a tux? I'm on TV in a tux and I'm smoking and I'm handsome. Oh, well, how did this happen? Well, whatever. Let's keep doing like that Dean Martin thing.
Right.
I couldn't pull it off. I looked like an idiot. I looked like some chimp just, you know.
Well, my girlfriend, back when I was a smoker, she goes,
I don't mean to come off as desperate, but is she seeing anybody? Okay, go ahead.
She said, I'm going to do an impression of Kimberly smoking. So basically she sat down and she held her one arm all the way out because I hated when cigarette smoke would get in your hair and everything. So I would always just hold my hand all the way. And the funny thing was, is I didn't tell people. So I didn't offer up that I was a smoker. If I met someone that was a smoker, I would smoke. But if I met someone who wasn't a smoker, I wouldn't smoke. And so it's not that I was trying to fool people.
So you never, but you were addicted.
I was totally addicted, but I was like, I was kind of like a closet smoker. I mean, I would do it in public and everything, but I wouldn't, you know. It's also funny too because one time I met this guy on fucking Match, Yahoo Personals or Match.com or one of those stupid things. And so I put myself down as a non-smoker because I don't know why. I just figured I'll just quit if I meet someone that I really like or whatever. So I meet this guy. Now he puts down that he is a smoker. He turns out to be this like trust fund guy. And he just was living off somebody's trust fund and he never had to work in his whole life. So he was not very interesting. But anyway, so we met and we were talking and he was smoking. I'm like, hey, can I have a cigarette? He's like, I thought you weren't a smoker. And I was like, well, I lied. And then I like basically smoked more than he did. And I remember he just kind of like shook his head at me and he thought, okay. But neither one of us liked the other. But you know, here's the thing about him, and I'll always remember this. He did not walk me to my car. It was late at night. We were in California. Oh God, where were we? I can't think of the name. It's a really cool street. But anyway, it's near Melrose and there's like this really cool bakery. And he didn't walk me to my car. And I just thought, you know, he's such a jerk. I'm sure he thought, that bitch lied to me. But so there was no love there. But yeah, I didn't want to tell anybody that I was a smoker. And people didn't know.
Nothing to be proud of.
So. No, and people didn't know. It's funny, I went out with this guy for 4 years off and on. And I had moved. And I had a balcony. And I had an ashtray out on my balcony. And he saw it. And it was after we had gone out. We were no longer dating. But for some reason, I wanted to show him where I moved. And so he saw the thing of cigarettes. He's like, who's the smoker? And he absolutely would have said to me, if he ever smelled cigarettes, he would have said something. So it's like, I hid it really well. But, you know, I was embarrassed and ashamed. And I should have been. And now it's pretty much the only regret that I have. I have, like, very few regrets. But I just wish that I had never started.
That too. It's literally the only regret that I have. Because they say, if you smoke, you know, if you smoke, it will definitely take a year off your life. By the way, I choose 1988 if we get a choice. if that's true, I regret it. But I'm a fairly healthy person. And once I did finally realize, I'm done. Yeah. I think I'm just done. I never felt like, you know, like it never showed up in anything, like no doctors ever said, did you smoke?
Right.
It was just 7 years of, I've never been much for like, you know, drugs or anything like that. So, and like I said, you know, drinking, I think it was around the year 2000, which still sounds so futury, but I just, that was when I just went, why? If what's the point here? What's the gain? I mean, I put on weight looking at pictures of food. So what's the point of having a liquid that, like,
right.
I don't like the taste of? I literally don't like the taste of. It makes me, at least I think I'm more entertaining and engaging to be around. It lowers my standards so mm-hmm. that, you know, how many times do you need to, you know, go to bed with Barbara Eden and wake up with Hayden O'Rourke? You know? How many times does that need to happen before you get the picture that this thing is not, it literally is something you're putting in your body that is lying to you?
Yeah. And you know? It makes me feel like shit. Like, I like the first probably 40 minutes.
That's it.
Yeah.
You get 40 minutes.
Yeah. And that's about it. And then I feel like shit for 3 days. So,
but 40 minutes of, like, because I would, like, I wasn't like, you know, somebody said, well, go out and have a beer. And I was like, if you want more than a beer, I was like, beer? No, if I'm going to, why would I take a Honda Civic if I can get a Maserati and just get in the far left lane and get to where I'm going?
Exactly.
So I liked a dirty martini or a Greyhound or something like that.
Right.
Something that was, something that took away the taste of the thing that I was actually drinking.
Yeah.
The funniest person was, like, I think I was having this conversation with all people, Conan O'Brien, who I mention only because I have to credit people when they say something, but I said, I met him with his wife and I said, did you guys, like, meet over drinks? Somehow that was part of the conversation. He goes, no, if I like the kinds of drinks where there are M&Ms floating, something like that. That was the way he put it, because I don't have that kind of constitution. I liked having had a drink, and I enjoyed that 40 minutes of devil may care.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be at parties and there were other people who were in the same, you know, mental state. So you'd end up going off together,
mm-hmm.
but you were really going off together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you weren't in reality. And that, and I just thought, you know what I don't need is a reputation for being one of these guys in this business. So I just, it was easy. That was kind of an easy decision.
Yeah.
But the other one, and I know it's not for a lot of people, but I did the whole thing. Like I wasn't sure because I knew I had it in my family. So I went to AA meetings because that always fascinated me anyway. And I walked away from those things realizing, okay, I don't think it's drinking for me. I think it's being around, and this is still a problem. I love people who have this problem, you know, in every way. I love that. So Al-Anon is, so I did have this, I grew a real, affection is the wrong word, a real respect for what, I think is probably one of mankind's greatest achievements. I say without any irony at all, the 12-step program, which mm-hmm. is like a perfect thing, as close to perfect thing as I think we've done.
Mm-hmm.
And realize, oh, I think my place is with other people who like to be around people who think this is a good idea.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I seem to fit right in there somehow. I need to figure out what that is, you know, and manage that.
Okay, now I'm gonna switch this up a little bit.
Right.
And this is just an odd little question here, because of my own life. And so I'm just asking you, but, you know, I mean, I'm going to be 56 years old in July. And so I'm assuming we're close to the same age. And do you ever, like, now that you're getting older, I mean, I've been doing this my whole life, but when you get older, you look back on your youth and you remember certain people and you're like, hey, I wonder what that person is up to. And then, like, randomly call them out of the blue. Do you ever do that?
Do I ever do that? No, I text.
Oh, okay.
I text. I did that. I did two of those yesterday. And it's usually, it's for all the right reasons. You know, Facebook ruined, you know, reunions. Mm-hmm. I mean, reunions
used to be
the reason to go say, just, you know, want to see who's fat and bald. Just want to figure out who's, you know. And now we have Facebook, so there's no need
reason.
For a reunion. So there's a reunion actually that I I would have liked, I kind of wanted to attend because it wasn't a reunion reunion, but it was gonna, there were gonna be a lot of people that I haven't spoken to for a while, and it was a college improv group called the Meow Show at Northwestern, and it just turned out that I couldn't go because of scheduling conflicts. But that's going to happen, and that was truly one of the great 3 month stretches of my entire life was being part of this. I figured myself out as an actor. I, like, a lot of stuff made sense. It was one of those great moments of youth where you're like, wow, I think I belong in this room. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so much the improvising, it was the sensibility mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. Also, as an actor, like, oh, it isn't just standing across the stage from some depressed girl in a peasant dress crying, trying to remember my lines. It's bringing myself on stage, finding some sense of comfort, and something will get communicated to the audience. It was like on that basic level. And I had a real affection for that. And a lot of those people, you know, there's some great actors, some of them who were in the same group that I was, like Dermot Mulroney mm-hmm. was in that improv group. Funny guy.
Really?
You know?
Wow.
And he's not, no, well, he's done a lot of romantic comedy, right. But you wouldn't know how clever and witty he was.
Yeah.
The owner of Joy Valhalla, probably Richard Rudutsky, maybe to this day the funniest guy I've ever met. But just once we all graduated, he was like, you know, I think I'm just going to marry my girlfriend. And his father ran Joy Valhalla, which if I'm assuming you're not Jewish.
No.
But Joy, you know, halva is that candy that no one
yes.
buys.
Yes, yes.
Unless they're Jewish, which is pressed sesame seeds and sugar, yes. basically. And also they, you know, for the kids, jellied, you know, yes. whatever. It's all the dessert version of gefilte fish. No one who's not Jewish would even train yourself not to even notice they're there. But it's actually, I'm joking, but it's very popular. It's a big company. And he runs Joy Valhalla.
Oh,
but
wow.
He also, now this is interesting. He had such a strong and does have such a strong, effortlessly hilarious comic voice. In the class behind me was a cat named David Schwimmer. Maybe you've heard that. Now, David Schwimmer also thought everybody thought Richard Rudutsky was the funniest guy in the world. And if you're around somebody who's that funny, you tend to pick up their rhythms. If, you know, especially when you're younger and you're trying to figure out who you are, you know, how do I talk? How do I sound? Richard Rudutsky spoke in a way that what I hadn't heard before. He did things like, and maybe you'll recognize this because I thought, God, this is funny. I want to bring this out to the world. He wouldn't say, oh my God. He'd go, oh my God.
Right.
So you add Schwimmer to that. And then where Schwimmer went, you realize that's the delivery system to the rest of the world, because the whole world should know how funny that is. And if he's going into Joy Valhalla, which is, you know, how many Jews are there and how many percentage of Jews actually are going to meet the Willy Wonka of Joy Valhalla and receive the, oh, pause, my God thing? No, there's got to be some system in place that's going to deliver that gem to the world through David Schwimmer. He was the Moses. He was the Moses of that delivery.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fascinating.
I hadn't seen it ever before in my life. It doesn't mean it's true, but the next time I saw it was on a little show called
Friends.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So do you, yeah. Do you reach out and to those people now?
I hate them. No. You mean reach out to
just,
Jews?
To
yeah,
old friends.
No, Schwimmer, you know, it's funny. Schwimmer and Stephen Colbert was in his class. I had this thing, I don't know if you had it, but all through high school, and it lasted through college too, which to me was an extension of, it was like high school with, you get to live with people.
Right.
But I had this thing where anybody in a grade below me was truly beneath me and not worth. They really had to be. If I was going to learn your name, if I was going to go to the trouble of learning your name, you had something going on, you know? So I knew Schwimmer because I thought he was really a very funny guy. Long hair, and just nothing like the person who, you know, you see now.
Yeah.
Very, very good actor. Did, saw him do all kinds of drama and thought, oh, he's just a very good actor. Stephen Colbert was somebody who I was like, does he go to school here? Does he work at the Cone Zone? You know, where I never quite knew him. And he knew me, but I didn't. And I remember, and I realized, oh, he's one of those guys. But I saw him a year after I graduated, plus some. So he must have just graduated. And we were both still in Chicago. And he goes, Craig. And I turned around and I went, oh, God, right. It's either David or Mike. I can't take the chance. I can't take the chance. And I says, hey, pal, you know, which is what,
right?
You know, the bogus. And I think I told him that story because then, of course, he exploded and he is who he is. But like, I think, and he would have found it funny, but like years later, I found myself doing some show with him where we were together for like 2 weeks. And I think I told him, you've become a person of significance, and I'm happy to say I've memorized your name. And I mean, the way it was actually pronounced and your, you know, your comic twist on it. He's a remarkable human being, by the way. He's a remarkable human being. Because the thing we were doing was a concert version of the play Company. Mm-hmm. And he was at that point doing the Colbert Report. So he had already become this person whose name was worth, in my book, worth remembering. Mm-hmm. And so he shows up the first day of this thing. We have 2 weeks. And it's Company, but we're doing it with the New York Philharmonic. So it's a big thing. It's quick. It's going to be very exciting, but it's going to be like singing in front of a, you know, I don't know, if you, standing in front of the Philharmonic. It's just like the musical version of Turbine Jets, mm-hmm. really powerful. It was going to be 2 weeks. Patti LuPone was in it. Mm-hmm. Neil Patrick Harris. Everyone in it was really great. And I knew the musical, but I wasn't familiar with the play. And they said, well, they want you to play Peter. And I was like, Peter, I don't know what song is that? He goes, he really doesn't sing very much. I go, okay. So I wanted to know how big a part Peter was. So I road tested it. And I went out into the Broadway community. I said, I'm going to do that. I think you're doing that Company thing. Oh, what part? And I would say, Glenn. I'm going to play Glenn. And they go, oh. And I say, no, seriously, I'm playing Peter. And they go, oh, same reaction to the pretend part. But it turned out it was a part that was much bigger in the original production that they wanted to put back in. Mr. Sondheim wanted to put it back in. And I did have the delight because at the time it was a little too racy. Peter was a guy who was married and then takes the main character played by Neil Patrick Harris aside and says, you ever been interested in having a homosexual, you know, like, and it was too racy for 1969, so they cut it out. But it was a very funny scene, and Sondheim always regretted not doing it. So I did get to I introduced myself to Mr. Sondheim after the thing. He said, I've always wanted to see it, and now I've seen the best possible version. Oh. Thank you. And he did say that to me.
Wow.
And I was floored. And then I also told him, I said, you know, I just lost my choir teacher, who was like a second father to me. Wait a minute. No, that was my father. He was like a father to me. And he said, what's his name? I said, like, he'd know him.
You're right.
I said, oh, it was Mr. Troutwine. He go, we all need our Mr. Troutwine. Oh. And the fact that Mr. Troutwine had just passed, and Stephen Sondheim said his name.
Wow.
Just meant the world.
Yeah.
How I got from, let's go take a step back and let's just map Joy Behalva to making Stephen Sondheim cry. You figure that out, because that's what I'm dealing with, okay, lady?
Well, the reason I asked you was really just to get to my own story.
Oh, good. this is why I don't have second dates. Go ahead.
No, I'm just kidding. No, but I did actually, in the last couple weeks, reach out to two different people that I used to know and have communicated with over the years sporadically, but such different experiences, because there was this one guy that I used to kind of know. He was in my social group, and I never considered him to be very
deep. He was an adjunct.
He's not very deep. He's just not a deep person. In fact, okay, you know the movie American Beauty?
Yes.
So we saw that movie, and he said, "Oh, that's clever." That's about as far as he can go. So anyway, I didn't expect much, but I haven't talked to him in a really long time, and I saw that he had a work anniversary on LinkedIn, and which I'm never on LinkedIn, but I get all these alerts. I mean, I'm on it, but I get that too.
Yeah. So anyway, what are you gonna do? Not press the button.
Yeah. So I go over to him and I said, congratulations on your business. He's owned his own business now for like 43 years or something. So anyway, he's like, oh, give me a call. So I thought, okay, I'll have a call. And, we start talking, and it turned into this. I talked about it on two podcasts, so I'm not going to go into it into depth, but it just turned into this complete hellscape where he was upset because he said he doesn't like Donald Trump, but he basically didn't understand how dangerous he was, and then he was saying a bunch of stuff about woke, and he was going crazy, and it was like, oh my god, he was literally getting hysterical. And then he told me that he said, I'm sorry I got you all worked up. And it was like, I'm not the one who got worked up, dude, but whatever. So I had that conversation with him, and it was very upsetting for me for several days, because he was so awful and off-putting. And so then there's this guy.
I hope he's not a podcaster.
No, he's not. He's just some dumbass that I used to know back in like the late 1999s. Okay, so then there's this other guy, and you probably don't know him, but his name is Jamie James, and he's a singer. He's a performer. He's a musician, I should say.
Okay.
He's more than a singer, but he plays a guitar, and he used to be in Steppenwolf, and then he also currently, he was, for the last several years, he performs with Dennis Quaid. It's Dennis Quaid and the Sharks.
Oh, yes, Dennis Quaid and the Sharks.
Yes, so he's the guitar player. So he and I have known each other for a really long time, and I haven't talked to him for like 10 years. And so he used to play a lot at Jack Sugar Shack. That's where I met him. This place in California, Jack Sugar Shack, with Harry Dean Stanton. And so he would play guitar for Harry. So occasionally I look him up on YouTube, and I was, I saw a thing with him and Harry Dean at the LA Film Festival, and Harry Dean was such a great singer. Oh my God, he was so much fun. He would I don't know if you ever saw him sing, but he would have a martini in one hand. We were at this tiki bar, and he would have a martini in one hand and a cigarette on the other, and he'd get up on the bar and he would sing. And it was like, oh my God, he was so freaking cool. But
Trader Vic's.
Exactly. It was so cool. Yeah. And that's how I met Jamie. And,
the delightful, when the circumstances are delightful.
Yeah. And everything so this, about, yeah. Yeah. So now the conversation I had with him was completely in the opposite direction. It was wonderful. And it was so funny to me, because it was we just had fun. It was unfortunate, because he was telling me that he had, now he's, I think I briefly dated him, but I say date very loosely. We went to a movie.
Well, that's the way we like it. Good.
Yeah.
We want to be dated loosely. That's what we're looking for.
It was never anything serious. Yeah. Mostly we just had a friendship. And so he had a, in 2020, he had a heart attack. And so I guess he had quadruple bypass surgery or something. And then he told me he had a near-death experience, which was blowing my mind, because I love reading and listening to other people's near-death experiences.
Yeah.
And then he but it was great, because he was so, it was it was so funny. I don't know, as I'm getting older, I can just feel I reminisce a lot now. I used to call my grandma, and I would be what are you doing? And she'd say, reminiscing. So I'm I'm turning into my grandma.
Reminiscing.
And so I just wondered, I wonder how many people, I'm not necessarily recommending it, but it's kind of fun when you hit the right person.
I think, I was having this conversation. I can't actually track. I was joking, but I can track back from the joy of it. Because the reason I brought up that whole meow, the reunion thing, and I was, I was thinking about nostalgia,
mm-hmm.
and how I always assumed I would be a nostalgic person. But looking back at that guy who always assumed that, I was wrong. And what's weird is I miss that guy.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like nostalgic for the guy who thought he would be nostalgic. It's like, whatever happened to that sweet kid who thought that he would have a fondness for things, you know, that that there would be, I'd look back and there'd be a patina, some glow.
Right.
When really it's like, if you walked into my apartment, I'm sorry, if you walked into my estate, and took the golf cart to the main house, and then, you know, press the right numbers and answer the questions correct. No, but you wouldn't know what I do for a living, because I don't get any pleasure at looking, reminding myself of, yeah, I did that, you know, like, it's not for good or bad reasons. It's not like, well, that was a long time ago, or that was really exciting. The major sort of like, I did that. There's none of it. I don't. And when I'm in some, I think what it is I had one exceptionally great parent who had their feet on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and there were things to be taken care of. And when I look back, I tell her all the time. Clearly, I'm talking about my father. I tell her all the time. I don't know how you did that. And her answer is always, what choice did I have?
Right.
And I was like, let's start with the AIDS. Astoria, you know? Like, literally, how did you keep two mastodons of, you know, from killing each other, A, but also in this upper-class neighborhood when you had no... How did you do it? And so I don't have nostalgia for that time. I have memories, mm-hmm. that I see, when I'm at my best... And if somebody, you know, when somebody likes me, it's usually because I've picked up a quality and from this person, this mother person, that I could describe on paper, but deep down on a molecular level, I suppose I understand, because in my best moments, I am of her.
Yeah.
But I can't. But the other stuff. Is all, everything else seems to be, I had this, it's very hard to articulate, I'm trying, but there were circumstances that she was thrust into. She had certain Betty Crocker expectations that all went to shit after 15 years. And then she just had two sons. And that's when you find out who you are. Mm-hmm. It was one of those moments where she, you know, what choice did she have?
Yeah.
Well, according to her constitution, it was, I raised these two kids and I put them through college. As if,
mm-hmm.
this guy had done what he said he meant, his vows and all that kind of stuff. And she did it. And it makes nostalgia, it's a nostalgia killer, because when you see somebody in real time, you know, actually like in the midst of a fire, grab you, and then carry you up the iron ladder, you know, out of the fire,
mm-hmm.
To safety. And you actually have a memory of that. And it's real. It's hard to romanticize,
right,
anything else, because it doesn't get, that's what actual movies are made of.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's, I remember seeing, when my parents were still together, I remember seeing The Poseidon Adventure, being very taken with that movie. I'd never seen anything like it before and loved it. And Gene Hackman, especially in that movie, had a real big effect on me, and his selflessness, whatever it was about it, it connected with everything that was great about that movie, really connected with me on a very important level. And I'm sure that you know, I've used that metaphor before. You know, sometimes you're on fire and you've got to climb, you've got to find that metal ladder, mm-hmm. and like smoking or drinking for some people, each rung is going to be really painful, and you're going to have to decide to put your hand on the next rung,
because
it's been on fire. But eventually the rungs are going to get cooler and cooler, and then it's just climbing, and then you climb towards that cool little circle, and that's the outside. And then that's the first half of your life, I think, basically. And then certain people develop a taste for going back down to the ladder, into the fire, grabbing as many people as they can and pulling them back out. And that's the second half of your life. I think that's important, you know. Yeah. And that was the quality I saw in I saw mothering. I saw someone, I saw one parent look for the ladder, actually found probably an exit door, you know. And then I saw a mother grab her kids, find the ladder. And I mean, her life was on fire. Everything she wasn't ready to she wasn't ready to raise kids alone. No job experience. Climbed up the ladder, got us. We were educated. To this day, how did you pull this off?
Right.
And whatever she did, she ended up getting a job because she's a smart person. But she ended up getting a job starting entry level. And by the time I graduated college, she was retiring, and I was. Flying, it was a few years after college because that doesn't work out time wise. But anyway, I'm flying to do, you know, speak at her retirement dinner. And I'm writing my cute little speech on the plane about just making little jokes about growing up with my mom. And then I listened to all the stories that the people told at the retirement dinner and the boss of this company, big international company. Not an exciting gig, but she sold. Time for conference centers worldwide. So she'd travel around the world and she would get corporations to, you know, why don't you have your yearly, you know, getaway at this property. And she just was very good at it, but she didn't enjoy it. She just happened to be good at it. And this guy who owned the company said, we wouldn't be here tonight if it wasn't for Pat, my mom's name. If the company and the company certainly wouldn't. And if we existed, we wouldn't be thriving. We're thriving because of her, because of everything she, and I realized I did how little I knew about my mom.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh, that's the final stage of, you know, a child's narcissism falling away like bark. And you actually, it's the moment where you see your parent as this other human being who's been through stuff that, like, I've been through a breakup and I fell apart, you know? And like just the breakup itself, if I had a kid or even a goldfish to take care of, both would have been flushed down the toilet. But she, so I realized I'm looking at this, I'm looking at everything I hope I have in me. So anyway, in the most roundabout way, I've been wrestling with this question, where is my nostalgia? Why didn't I change everything I needed to change to make sure I went back to this reunion, which was a turning point in the most positive way, 3 months with these people. And I would, and if I won't see these people, you know, some of them I'll see again, but most of them I won't, because this show is a 50-year history and it's the big, you know, and a lot of people came out of this, and I just thought it's a chance to celebrate. And I thought, I've been walking around all this time with whatever, holstering whatever gun that is, in the way that my mom has. You know, I'm not comparing the two experiences, but whatever I learned as an actor, and like my mom, I'm sure wouldn't want to go back to 1974.
Yeah.
And my experience with this would have been 1985, was a hell of a lot more pleasant. It was pure pleasant, and yet. There's no gravity. It would be a decision to get on a plane and do, and probably have a perfectly nice weekend, but I would have to rearrange so much and disappoint so many people in order to do it that I thought, I think it's easier to just do it this way. And I didn't think about it again. I made the necessary calls and I didn't do it. And I thought, is this cold of me? And I realized, I think it's just, first of all, the word nostalgia, it was like, I looked up stalgia. Realize there's no such word, nostalgia. So it begins with no, which, so whatever it is, it's nothing. No, say no to nothing. I think is okay. When are we going to begin recording? Give me a question. You know, you should probably not even ask questions. I think I'm the kind of mind where you just go yellow.
See, and yeah, I do. Okay, I have well, green banana, written banana. Down.
Yeah.
Well, we will wrap up, and I'm going to save.
I promise I'll answer your questions.
No, that's okay. We're going to wrap up, though. But okay. I'm saving my embarrassing personal question for the next time we talk.
Oh, don't do that. Okay. All right. Okay.
But, I wanted to say, though, as far as, just kind of tacking on to what you were saying, I have a different approach to it. And of course, obviously, I'm filled with nostalgia, and I like to walk down memory lane. And there were certain people in my life who, at the time, maybe I had a falling out or, felt a certain way about. And then time passes. Like, I had a girlfriend. We were very, very close. And then, not going to get into it, but our friendship ended. And so, a lot of time has gone by, and I have just recently, I'd say in the last year, we follow each other on Threads now. And so it's kind of fun to catch up and it's like whatever hard feelings might have been there in the past, I just look at it now and I feel like life is pretty fleeting. Sometimes it feels like it takes forever, but it goes by so quickly, and we have these connections with people. And these, all these people in your life, whether you liked them or not, have helped shape you in some way. And so I feel actually, I'm finding that I'm feeling all this gratitude, not for the idiot that I spoke to who was going on about woke. And God, he was so disappointing. So disappointing.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. But it's like I talked to these people who made me laugh or whatever it was, that we had a good time.
Yes.
And I just enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just saying it's just fun to do it.
The more direct answer would be, yes, I did. And I believe I said, twice recently, yesterday, and it was by text, but I happened to come across Steven Weber, actor we all know and love, America's Steven Weber. And he was an interviewer had asked him a question about a mutual friend that we had both lost. That the world had lost. And I thought, oh, I don't know how Steven's going to answer this question because it's a tricky one. And mm-hmm. sometimes people, he answered it in such a beautiful and simple way that I'm trying to think of the phrase I used. I could look it up, but it was respectfully, distance is detached is the would be a cold version of the word, but without pontificating or without giving an opinion about the way we lost this person or something mm-hmm. like that. He answered the question, and it was dignified. It was sort of a dignified distance, I should say.
Right. Yeah.
And Steven has a quicksilver mind, and he was bought up in the funny, and I thought, oh, I think my big hope was don't be glib.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I thought he would try to be funny. He's a smarter human being than that, but don't reduce this to it. Mm-hmm. He put some thought, real serious thought into it because it was worth it. And so I did. I wrote him a text, and I realized, oh, it's probably been more than a year since mm-hmm. I've, this is somebody I used to hang out with, and we've worked together, and I love. And I just thought, that was a remarkable thing. I really like what I did. And rather than just sort of note that I like that there are people who do that, mm-hmm. who don't just take advantage of an opportunity like that because they're a public figure, but have some reserve and class.
Yeah.
So I wrote him and I told him that. And I didn't, I expect him to either go, huh? No, I didn't expect that. But I expect him to go, thank you, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe whatever it was. I don't know if I expressed it clear or if that was even something he said. Thank you for saying that.
Huh.
I remember being asked that question, and I wasn't prepared for it because it was all very fresh. And so I really was just aware of the way he put it was different, but I pictured somebody, like a pilot piloting a plane, just monitoring everything. Mm-hmm. So that he was very, very, he said, it was important to me to answer that question the way that I did. I'm glad you saw it. Thank you for the text.
Wow. That's cool.
And more often than not, those times when I reach out, it's not arbitrary.
Yeah.
those thoughts when somebody, you know, that event I mentioned this Drew Friedman event the other night. I'm sitting on the panel and I thought, this is so nice that I'm up here with these people that I really enjoy. This is a nice moment in life. And I was nowhere near loss. You know, I wasn't in a place of loss. I really was in like this place of abundance. If I'm going to go full Oprah on you. I was just feeling nice. And this kid came up, you know, there are a lot of people who are fan. There's crossover fans of Drew's happen to be fans of another podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's podcast. And there's a lot of warmth now that he's passed, and they still play the podcast, and it's very much a living group on Facebook, and you know, you see these people. So, but one of these fans who I hadn't met knew that I was going to be there, knew that I was going to be on the panel, and went out of the. I was friends with Carrie Fisher, mm-hmm. and when she died, it was just really hard. I don't think I spoke too much about it publicly, but I did mention it on the show. Well, that would have been 10 years ago or whenever we bought. Yeah, it's been almost 10 years. I think it's been just 10 years. No, it's been 7, hasn't it? God, whatever it's been. I'm great with time. Yesterday. anyway, this guy knew I was going to be there and went out of his way and just said, hey, I just wanted to give you this. Nothing. And he gave me Postcards from the Edge. It was just a copy of her book, which I'd been thinking, I want to reread her stuff. I miss her. I want to reread her stuff. And somebody put it right into my hand.
Interesting.
I thought, my God, this is one of those perfect moments. This is one of those moments where I'm like, okay, I get being agnostic, but how could you like not believe something else is going on? That just, there's some magnetic wonderfulness going on.
Well, for all those people who listen to my patrons only podcast, I talk about this all the time. That energetic
met.
Okay, yes.
I have to join that. It sounds like a good place to be. Well, no, I mean that and Seska. But it sounds like I don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Usually because I'll pay for it and then I'll forget about it. That's my
Well,
problem.
And mine is so just it's based just to be really quick, what I started. A friend of mine said to me in 2019, she's like, you should manifest. You should intentionally manifest. And I used to play around with that, and I didn't know what I was doing. So I thought, you know what, because I was in a really low spot.
What do you mean? Does that mean manifest like I have an idea, I'm not doing it? Is that what you
mean? Yeah, it's like you want to create your life. You manifested your career. We manifest our lives. Yeah. We're like the director of the play of our lives. And so our energetic, like the way I look at it is, you know, the choices we make and the energetic vibration that we're putting off, like the state mm-hmm. that we're in, really the best way to describe it. It's an energy, and it either repels or draws, or, you know, it creates. And so, I mean, there are certain things that we can do. Like if you want to get an apartment, that's not that hard, right? You can manifest an apartment with certain physical actions that you can take. But there's other things that, like, if you want to be a successful actor or a successful restaurant owner, you can't just take a step. There's this extra zazazu that is attached to it. And so I wanted to kind of play around with that. And then, you know, I started looking up intentional manifestation on YouTube, and eventually I found, I think I have found the best way to do it, but it's always a work in progress. But anyway, one thing led to another.
Well, wait a minute, don't leave me hanging. That's big, because I've been in that zone, honestly. So what is, this is fascinating. So what, even, I know we don't have a lot of time, but can you be a little bit more specific?
Yes.
And not say Zazazu ever again.
Okay. That's from Sex in the City, by the way.
Okay.
But anyway, let's see how I can explain it. Okay, there's a couple different stories that I have. And I know for anybody out there who thinks this is all woo-woo, it's been great. I hope you had fun, but I'm going to talk about this now. So it's I don't think it's magic. I just literally think it's the energy. But, you know, I like to play around with that. I think the best way to describe intentional manifesting is, you know, you want to align, like if you have a desire, let's say it's a relationship, you want a different kind of lifestyle, mm-hmm. all the way down to, I just want a new desk and I don't know how I'm going to get a new desk or whatever it is that you want.
Right.
you kind of have to get into the state of already having that desk. You have to feel like, for instance, this is perfect. You know who's like a natural intentional manifester is somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I don't know if you saw his documentary, but he talked about when he saw Mr. Universe, he was like, that's me. He didn't say, oh, I hope I'm going to be Mr. Universe. He saw people.
I totally get it.
Yeah. So it's like, and then I think, though, that what I didn't understand back in the 90s when I was trying to do this, as specifically as an actor, I allowed a lot of limiting thoughts to get in my way. And when I first started acting, I had the assumption, because they say we manifest what we focus on and what we believe is possible. We don't manifest just what we want. And so when I first started acting, I assumed that I was going to be successful. And then as I, you know, went on in the business and I started seeing things and I recognized, oh, wait a minute, my body is not like all the other women's bodies, because though I'm thin, I'm tall. Okay. And so I started having all these, like, this is what I actually thought. I thought I would hear women talk about being on a film and they would say, you know, I never get any sleep. And all I would think about is, oh my God, what if I get a film and I can't sleep because I heard that your metabolism slows down when you don't get enough sleep, and then I'm going to be fat and no one's going to hire me. So I would go off into the, so that I didn't necessarily manifest that, but it was like, I just wasn't getting anywhere. And so I wish I would have understood this back then. And I'll just tell you this really quick little fun story that I did with a manifestation exercise. So I saw somebody on YouTube who probably didn't know what they were talking about, but whatever. They said, you know, write down on a piece of paper something that you think that's not a big deal. Of course, this could happen. You have no attachment to it. That's the other thing. You can't be attached to it. If you think about it too hard and want it too hard, it's like you're suffocating it. So I wrote down, now this is funny. I wrote down, thank you, universe, for my $250. Because I thought, you know, somebody could send me $250, or I could find it, or I could get it from work or whatever. That's not a lot of money. So when I wrote down, thank you for my $250, I thought, you know, maybe I shouldn't write mine. But I thought I'm going to do it anyway. So I write down my thing. And so when I go grocery shopping, I use Bob's ATM card. And he was short $250. So I had to replace it, and then he had to give me back my $250, which happened. So I thought, okay, now I'm going to be smart about this. And so I wrote down, thank you, universe, for the $250 that I didn't expect and got in a really happy, fun way. And then I just forgot about it. And then like 3 weeks later, randomly, my dad, who never sends me money, sent me $250. Wow. It was just weird, you know?
So it's so funny that it was the exact amount.
Yeah. And
it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. And then I've got one more story, and this is funny, but this was not intentional. But when I was like 14 years old, and I just want to tell the story because of the name. But when I was 14 years old, I liked this boy. His name was Jimmy Joe Kunkel. And this was down the shore in Bozeman, Maryland. Anyway, so I saw him the summer before. Everyone had a crush on Jimmy Joe. He was like the Brad Pitt, you know, shirtless.
Of course. Yeah.
Very cute. Everyone loved him. So I had just discovered praying. I was not religious, but my aunt and my cousin prayed, and I'm like, oh, I want to pray. Yeah. So I was like, dear God, please put me in a position where I can be alone with Jimmy Joe, but if I don't like him, give me an out. And so I had that intention and I said it.
It's a Love American style episode. Yeah, go ahead.
So Jimmy Joe shows up and he's like 2 years older than me. And he looks like a man and he's got like facial hair. And I'm freaking out because I'm only 14 and I'm not ready for anything. I've never kissed a boy, nothing. So he tells my grandmother, who was very protective of me, that he wants to take me out on the boat. And I'm sure she's going to say no to him. And she's like, sure, take her out. And I'm like, what? So we go out on the boat and he's saying things to me like, wow, you look really beautiful. You look like you should be married about now. And I'm like, oh my God, no.
Oh no, the man from Uncle is here. Yeah.
Exactly. And so long story short, he couldn't start the boat. And we had to go back. And I was like, oh my God, praying works. I was like convinced, because exactly what I wanted to happen happened. So I do think that with the intentional manifestation. So anyway, I got into that, and then it branched me off into near-death experiences. And what's fascinating, I've probably watched like 500 or more near-death experiences now. And what I have concluded is that we are all natural. We are all we are all spiritual beings living in the physical, and we are natural manifestors. But as a physical being, we have certain things in our way. We just have to work around them. So that's basically how I feel about it. But yeah, I think it's so fascinating to me. So I absolutely believe, and I'm looking at that picture on Facebook right now with you holding up that book. So yeah, I think there is the postcards from the edge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He had just given it to me.
Yeah.
That's that's maybe the only genuine photo of me smiling. Because who stands with their arms around someone they don't know smile?
I know, really. You know?
But I was so touched by it. Well, that's great. And I actually needed to hear that, because I'm working on stuff. And working through some frustrations is the wrong word, but you know how life is.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, why am I? I'm getting in. I think this is more about me getting in my own. I don't know what the next step is for a particular project, you know.
Right.
It's just like I have to put myself out on the limb, and I've done the thing where I've been like, I'm thinking of doing this. You put it out there, and then you speak to a few friends. And go, what do you think about me doing this? And to a person, they've been like, it's great. Just do it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the next step is, and also after you tell somebody you're going to do something, I don't know if you get this, but there's that self-consciousness.
Right.
Well, now they expect me why did I go and tell anybody? Why didn't I just do like that weird area that I think, you know, you really can't afford to do if you're like a professional diver.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, you got to lean forward or not.
Exactly.
And there are a million of different, there are a lot of different factors, some of them involving sharp rocks that you can't control on your way.
No, you can't.
But the only thing
you can control is how you react to those sharp rocks.
Exactly. And I think like in everything we've discussed, or what some people arguably would say I blathered about, but whatever it was, I can bring it all back to intentionality. You know, if like all of this was everything good, like I wanted to stop smoking, I saw some of the horrors of what drinking could be. It almost always comes back to what's your intention. It's ultimately how I'm not a judgmental person, but I'm learning how to take care of myself. And it usually comes back to what's that person's intention. And if I'm asking myself too many questions, I tend to keep my distance. It's, you know, and what is my intention with this thing that I want to do? The answer will come out of that. 'Cause that's why I'm being so oblique, but it was a project I started. And then I thought, I think this is a good thing. I'm going to just get some feedback before I put more effort into this, because it will begin costing money to, you know, like to actually do this. So, and that was reason enough. That was okay. My intention might have been, I think I can almost say for sure, my intention is to pause. My intention was, you know, I could have a creative experience at no cost and no one will know about it if I don't say anything.
Right.
But now that I've done it, I think I'm on to something. Now I want to get some considered opinions. And I got them. So what's the holdup, pal? Well, the holdup is I think I just wanted to do it that once, and I don't have enough torque to keep pushing it beyond that.
Right.
Or I'm scared, which is more likely, and the place you want to be if you're doing something creative. Like, I don't know how this is going to work out.
Yeah.
You know, and I literally don't know what the next step is, because I sort of glued and pasted things together, but now I'd have to actually buy machines.
Right.
To actually make this thing happen. Hmm. Am I ready to do that? Do I have that? And then I go back to, you know, when I told you that story about my mom, and your corollary was, it was a different story. It was somebody who had, they had achieved something, and I can't remember how you described it. But whatever phrase you use, which I can't call up, and what I, when my mother said something like, "What choice did I have?" Mm-hmm. It's champ. What that is championship thinking. I'm not a basketball fan, like I'm not a sports fan, but I do remember reading an article about Michael Jordan, and somebody had said, "I know you can't fly. People can't fly. You can't fly, but you've come close to flying, and your percentages, you know, like the number of, you know, I mean, you make a lot of baskets, and you seem to be flying. So mm-hmm. what's going on there?" It was basically that, and he said, "I don't think it's very shrewd." He said, I don't think there's any way to answer that question, but I think what you're alluding to is what is happening in my head when I'm doing my job, when mm-hmm. I'm working. And he said, all I can tell you is I'm not thinking I can fly, and I'm not thinking of making the basket because it's already been made. Before I jump, before I even move, and before I sense somebody coming at me, and I'm going to fade one way and then go the next to lose him, I've already made the basket.
Yes, that's totally.
And it. I said, because I have no vocabulary or visual vocabulary even for basketball, no memories of ever, like, other than a Meadowlark Lemon, you know, like tripping over the Washington Generals, I had nothing obscuring my way between what he said and my mother saying, "What choice did I have?"
Right.
My mother had a lot of choices, and in a way, I'm answering my own question. Like, do I have the stuff? What choice do I have? A million choices.
Yes.
A million reasons. A million ways to say no, or to do what you were describing, which is just manifest it. You know, mm-hmm. it's actually already happening.
Yes, just manifest that shit.
Yeah, and it either is your destiny, because I also believe in destiny and fate. There's, that's maybe for another,
right?
You know, a conversation that really I try, no one would be interested. I'll have with myself at some point. But
I'm interested.
The things that are fated to happen, and then destiny is what you make of your fate.
I totally agree with that. Yes, that's interesting.
Yeah. So and somewhere in there is that. The gristle of manifestation, the part you can actually feel and get and develop a sense for, that how did this guy learn on a schoolyard or wherever he did, that was like, it's already in the basket. And where did my mother get, I can answer the question. My mother's father was a businessman who owned buildings all over Manhattan, lost them during the Depression, and then 20 years later owned the biggest flatware company in the world. And then, you know, like this guy was just, he did things. How do you do that?
Right.
How do you, you know, in the Depression.
Yeah.
And then you lose everything and you get it again. And then his daughter, who just had the Mary Tyler Moore flip Betty Crocker hairdo, is raising two kids and holding a spatula, and her husband doesn't come home. And all of a sudden she's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Well, I gotta put down the spatula and just start scoring baskets because it's already been done.
Yes.
They have to go to college, and I want them to be happy. They're not leaving the school system. It's been done.
Yeah.
And she did it. And she, this
That's
is a woman
exactly
who's
it.
85 years old and going to Zumba class.
Wow.
You know, and I still learn from her. I'm like, God damn it. Yeah, I got to get to the gym. I can make jokes about it. Little, like, I'm a group of Tyne Dalys. What does that even mean? But the truth is, I know what to do. Like that's step one. And just like the smoking, all that stuff.
Yeah.
We knew better.
Yes, we did.
And it shouldn't be a regret. My mother's, you know, my mother says to me, I'm so sorry I married your father. I'm sorry.
Oh.
She used to say that. And I said, Mom, let me just point out that if you hadn't, you'd be sitting in a room alone talking to yourself or to some kid named Walter, you know, like I'm happy you did.
Yeah.
And by the way, you wouldn't have found Jim, her current husband, who's the greatest man in the world. You wouldn't have found you wouldn't have earned Jim if you hadn't jumped that hurdle. You had your life to live. This was all, you know, and her eyes glazed over, as most people do when I go on and on. But no, she gets it on the level that she didn't need me to explain it.
Right.
You know, I learned it watching her, which is what's so funny, because she's apologizing for the thing she taught me. Is anyone listening awake? Just the clapping noise.
Is anyone out there? Hello. All right. Well, you know, I think this is a good place to wrap it up. But you have to stay on after we say goodbye on the public show, because okay. I just want to tell you something really quickly. But it's always. Oh, and I also just have to throw in there that Bob used to have a blog, yeah. and Steven Weber used to write on it. So there's that.
Oh, well, there was, he did a thing when nobody knew what was going to, when everything was transitioning from television and everybody thought, well, it's going to be online. We're going to have webisodes.
Right.
Weber had a Steven, he said, I'm going to do like a weekly Weber, whatever it was called, mm-hmm. worldwide. And so I said, I'll be your weatherman. I'll be your, the worldwide Weber man. And I did a weather report, just a helicopter.
Yeah.
Flying around, and I'm just me going, I'm your worldwide Weber, and I can't get all the words out. Your worldwide weather hurts or something. And then you'd hear like the gas conk out. And I did find footage of a helicopter over a city just stopping yeah. and plummeting. And that was it. That was going to be my weather report every time. But he didn't keep it going because aww. That's not the way things went.
Right.
You know, now we're streaming and everyone's happy. Thank you, Bob Iger. You're the best. You're the best. I'm so excited about his. Did you listen to the Disney call?
No, I did not.
Arena, it's like I was just. It's hilarious. People, what he gets away. And by the way, I've met him before. He's approved me. I've been on things. I have nothing against him personally. But as a business person, what do you think? Someone actually said, how can you account for blah, 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 which is basically everything I would have wanted to ask him, mm-hmm. you know? And he goes, well, it's funny. You know, you talk to the people who've been on the Star Wars Galactan army suit ride. Heidi fucked a rock. Sorry. Can I say rock? You know, they seem to, you know, and from people's responses, I'd say we're doing pretty well. And that was it. And wow. he got away. There are 1,000 people on the call and nobody said people's responses. Do you have anything like he's the man? Is he not literally like straddling the industry and stabbing it in the
yes.
heart? And people are like more,
please.
Yeah,
that seems to be that's going to be our downfall. It's just our stupid fucking stupidity.
Yeah, and but ultimately I have faith. I really do think that even if the worst happens, getting away from him, because it's just a reflection, like that's only happening because the people who actually run the company, which are the people who feed it money, mm-hmm. are allowing it to happen.
Exactly.
If people vote in,
yeah,
you know, the Duffy from F Troop again, mm-hmm. if they vote him in again, it's not his fault.
Right.
We're going to have to all work it out and then we'll really see what America's made of. You know, that's all that's happening
about
right
that.
Now.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid. I just think this is the time. This part of the conversation was destined to happen. We have to have it out. But it doesn't have anything it's not one. I'm not even kidding. It's not one guy.
Right.
Not,
no, it isn't.
As sick and deranged as he might be.
Yeah.
No one like, you know, it's like the Joker. He's mm-hmm. he's one guy. He just understands on a primal level how to manipulate. That's mm-hmm. all he's doing, and people are falling for it.
Yes, they are.
Anyway,
and it's so sad. But okay, so
let's even follow that. So whatever.
Well, let's just let's just take it off in a happy place now. And okay. I mean, I always ask everybody. You know, I'm just gonna tell my thing first. I always say tell everyone where to find you, but I'm just gonna say first.
Okay.
Where everyone can find me is on my pinned tweet. Okay. Now, where can people find you?
Your pinned tweet. Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Your pinned tweet.
Yes, okay. Pinned tweet.
Yeah, pinned tweet. I'll do something like that, but I'm basically Mr. Craig Biergo, MrCraigBiergo. Incidentally, if you spell my name, it sounds like you're trying to say it with rubber teeth. That's how you can remember. Biergo.
Biergo.
And I'm on
all
TikTok.
Of
it. I'm on the Twitter. I am on, what's the one you put me on? Sprout? Something?
Spoutable.
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 What?
Spoutable.
Oh, Spoutable.
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't spouted lately, but I will. Forthwith, toothbrush. And TikTok, I have a modest following I don't get. But I'll tell you, I'm a big fan of those Chinese people. I basically get on there and say, I'm just a big fan of the Chinese people. I really am. Who doesn't like the Chinese? Show of hands. Because they're just watching us. That's ridiculous. But I'm on there, I put stuff up. It lasts for 5 minutes because of everything's a copyright problem. Yeah. But I'm on there trying to figure that out. But I would say the one that the one that fits me the best is the Instagram.
Yeah. The Instagram.
The Instagram machine. For some reason, it seems to meet me there. But I'm also on, I still call it Twitter. Mm-hmm. I'm on there, but I'm on there a lot less because it's turned into some pirate's den of awfulness.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah.
And you're on Threads too, right?
And I'm in Threads, which is, you know, again, like I just come full circle. I tried unsuccessfully to grab, just for my own amusement, so I would have it, to download the Seska video that he found. But I don't know how he found it because I've been looking all over for that. So I'm so, you know, all praise be to Seska.
I will have to let him know. Yeah. Well, it's always fun talking to you, and I could talk to you for just ever. So you'll have to come back.
Refresh with a fresca, but there's nothing better than Seska. Okay, you'll have to clean your laugh out.
I know, it's going to have to AI that out.
Now, is there a post-game thing that I'm hanging out for?
No, but you're going to hang out because I want to tell you something when we cut off. But again, it's always fun talking to you, and I'll talk to you next time.
Oh, great. It's always my pleasure. Thank you.
You take care.